This is Let's Hear It for the Roy, written by Riri Mouse and read by Flower Parish. This is a Marvel and DC crossover fic that is a Mythbusters-esque AU. Season 4, Episode 5. It Could Happen. The Deadly Halloween. Tony, rubbing hands together. I've been looking forward to this one. Lex. Have you ever participated in a normal Halloween activity in your life? Tony. Sure. Haunted frat house, beer pong with little skulls drawn on the balls in Sharpie, teeny tiny costumes. Lex. Why am I not surprised? Tony. I didn't say who was wearing the teeny tiny costumes. I was pretty twinky back then. Lex. There I was this morning, optimistic that we'd film a one-take open that required minimal editing to be ready for prime time. Tony. That's for the lawyers and editors to sort out. Wait, did you actually just make a joke? Lex. Yes. Tony. It was a good joke. Lex. I do have a sense of humor. Tony. And you keep that buried way down deep. Lex. I wasn't hired to be funny. Tony. While I was hired for my brilliant mind and undeniable charm, my contract also requires me to be my own authentic self and let rip with the humor. Lex. Of course yours does. And now that you've let the humor rip, we've got a show to authentically launch. There's no shortage of myths and legends around Halloween, so this is going to be the first themed month for It Could Happen. Tony. And we're going to be kicking it off by biting into deadly apples while our considerably more lovable B team test out the 100 Steps urban legend. Lex. Apples, that's all. Tony. There's significantly more than one way to poison an apple, Lex. You should know that. AD. Cut. We've got it. You guys are officially released into the wild. Wait, wait. Hang on just one sec. Clint folds his arms. Do you mean to tell me that while you guys are tinkering in your nice, air-conditioned workshops, we are going to spend the next week walking up and down hills while taunting the spirits of the dead? Not real spirits of the dead, Tony says. Apparently, the network thought it would be in poor taste to film a myth about ghosts, demons, wishes, and curses in an actual cemetery where people bury their loved ones. I can't imagine why. We're building a prop cemetery on the old Bristol golf course. Lex shakes back his shirt cuff to check his watch. In about 20 minutes, wear shoes with traction. Tony, Clint, Natasha, and even Tim look pointedly at Lex's custom leather Oxfords. I'm not walking up and down the hill to game the urban legend system. It sounded like walking up and down hills to me, Natasha says, once Lex is gone, because she has apparently never met a pot she wouldn't stir. What do you think? She turns to Tim. Walking will be involved, but I don't see any reason we have to walk it personally every time. A surveyor robot shouldn't be too hard, Tim says after a moment's thought. There's a couple I could reprogram in the corral. First of all, Tony says, joining the little group and forestalling any more discussion with a raised forefinger. The point of testing this story is to find out if humans, regardless of height, can learn to match their step count uphill and downhill, and then match a precise 100 count. Second, the bots in the corral are my babies, and you will not be giving them a lobotomy. It's not a lobotomy, it's just a little reprogramming, and I can put them back the way I found them after, Tim offers, with the look of a man who wants to roll his eyes, but would rather keep his job. Even if it was a lobotomy, Clint says, jumping in again. Isn't that better than wearing us down to the bone by walking up and down a hill and counting our steps the whole way? No. Tony looks between the three of them. Seriously? Nobody sees the vision here. Tim cocks his head rather than raising his hand. Would the vision have to do with flaunting our pain for ratings? Tony shuts his mouth with a click. Maybe. But it'll also be great for the glutes, so... I think we each deserve a bonus if it gets the show a ratings boost, Natasha says. After all, our pain will be entirely driving the must-see television. That's all, Tony asks. Bonuses? We can do Lex passes through the small studio with, This is already what we're paying you for, and there are scores of viewers who would do anything to take your jobs. Nah, Clint says. The viewers like us. They're invested in us. So, yeah, they're gonna love watching us limp away from this one. Us, specifically. He holds Lex's eyes with a genuine, corn-fed Midwestern American grin. You only hurt the ones you love, Natasha says. I'm told I'm incredibly lovable when I put my mind to it, Tim says, and returns to clearly biting his tongue. We were discussing that very topic earlier. Natasha smiles up at Lex. Her smile is considerably less inviting than Clint's. One media interview with the lovable, charismatic new hire could ruin you, Lex. Why me? What about Tony? Tim lifts a shoulder and lets it drop. I'll talk him into letting me reprogram a couple of bots eventually. You're the one standing between our pain and our bonuses, Natasha says, over Tony. A couple? Tony asks, and is largely ignored. Maybe three, Tim says. I didn't even agree to one. Tim's face is solemn with the need to deliver bad news. You will. Redwood. Jay. Jay, check your phone already. I need you to stop me. Red Hood. Okay, Roy, whatever you're about to do, stop. No, you don't understand. Actually stop me before I make a pass at the new kid. Hem, isn't he kind of nerdy? Look where we are. Look what we're surrounded with. Everyone here is a nerd. I resent that insinuation. I'm here because there was an opening, you vouched, and it pays better than slinging espressos. Also, I was not made for customer service. I can't argue with that. But face it, I've been to cons with you, Jay. I've been in your childhood bedroom. You're a mega nerd. You are nerd prime. You are the nerd other nerds aspire to be if they are very, very good. I collect comics. That's different. I don't nerd out over disassembling AC units. AC-cowboy.jpg. Nobody nerds out over disassembling AC units. AC Cowboy? You nerded out over disassembling an AC unit last week. Oh, yeah, I did do that. Where does that rank me on the nerd scale? What were you listening to at the time? The hell does that have to do with anything? Just answer the question. Violent Femmes. You're looking up the Nerd Rock article on Wikipedia again, aren't you? Wikipedia says you're nerdy. That is the nerdiest fucking thing, man. Nerdy would be if I was the guy editing that entry. I'm checking on break. Don't think I won't. You don't even know my username. Big Bad Riding Hood. God damn it. Told you you should have used a stronger password on your phone. Asshole. I'm just looking out for you, amigo. We're getting away from the point here. There was a point? Once upon a time. Shit, I got nothing. The conversation is right there. Pointing emoji. Well, that's just rude. Roy pockets his phone. He tracks Jason to Lex's workshop, where he's standing in front of the remaining AC carcass and tapping a wrench on his opposite palm with a frown. So I distinctly remember something about you buying me lunch, Roy says, instead of suggesting the hacksaw. He'd use the hacksaw. Who needs a rusty old bolt to repurpose? Them, probably. Jason looks up for half a second while he gets a better grip on the wrench, ready to go in again. your memory is slipping, and lunch is a pipe dream until I get this thing unstuck. Hacksaw it is. Whatever, you're just not looking at it right. Roy plucks the hacksaw off the rack and hip-checks Jason out of the way. Some bolts are made to be unscrewed, and some bolts are made for beheading. This one is standing between me and lunch. He yeets the bolt head into the trash can on the other side of the workspace because he can, and he's a show-off. I had that. Jason drops the wrench and rakes a hand through his hair. Roy decides not to mention the black grease he just combed into his white streak. Sorry, Jay, but it had you. This is not a day for violence. This is a day for lunch. You could buy me lunch to show your appreciation for the assist. Jason's hair flops back down over his forehead, leaving a smudge of grease above his eyebrow. I am not your sugar daddy, Roy. Well, now Roy's not telling Jason about the grease smudge either. But I will treat you to craft services. Jason nudges Roy in the middle of his back. After I get the grease out of my hair. There's grease. Roy leans closer like a man searching for a little black grease on white hair. Or an asshole best friend. Mostly the second. Oh, wow, there it is. That's grease. Jason rolls his eyes. Meet you there. And I'm surprised you're not interested in fine craft services dining when we can set out on the tarmac to see if you can watch New Guy in action. In an environment that safely keeps even you from harassing anyone but me, and I'm used to it. That's a surprisingly valid point. Little bit insulting, but valid. You're acting like I flirt with everyone. Don't you? Roy has to stop to think, which he can privately acknowledge is a point in Jason's favor. He will not be admitting this out loud. I have not once flirted with Tony or Lex. Not into older men. I'm not into older men. I'm into keeping my job, remember? Harassment is a thing. Jason snorts. Go make us sandwiches. Did you just order me to go make you a sandwich? Roy presses a dramatic hand to his chest. Yep, Jason says, because he's an ungrateful asshole. Extra mustard. Because Jason is an ungrateful asshole, Roy makes his sandwich with exactly the usual amount of mustard and not a dollop more. But that hardly matters when Roy catches sight of New Guy and Natasha standing on either side of Clint while they all do the familiar camera shuffle to make Clint look less like a towering freak of nature. Roy sits down on the tarmac, opens his mouth to take a bite of his sad craft services sandwich, and almost drops it when New Guy bangs into Natasha, takes immediate damage from her murder stare, and murder stares back. Oh no, he's perfect. Natasha is going to adopt him before Roy can marry him. Roy is going to have Natasha as a mother-in-law. The thought is absolutely terrifying. Sandwich, Jason whispers in Roy's ear, jabbing an unreasonable elbow into his ribs. Cut it out, Roy hisses, conscious of the cameras. You cut it out. Jason sits down aggressively close, snatching his sandwich and forcing Roy to scoot a few inches over or fall over. Your mooning is getting between me and my lunch. I made your lunch. I think I deserve some thanks for that. Instead, he gets, where's the extra mustard? A tinny rendition of Love Shack pipes up under the strains of Killing Yourself to Live, and Roy nearly drops the soldering iron while fumbling his phone out of his back pocket. Jason doesn't wait for Roy to say anything when the call connects.
Okay, you have a lamentable, obvious, and frankly pathetic crush on New Guy. I believe you. And because I believe you and wish you future happiness in all things, his name is Tim.
Roy is silent for a moment, focused on the work part of being at work. Tim, huh? I can work with that. Tim. He likes Tim. Can't make it. Sorry, got a date with Tim. Yeah, that sounds good.
Of course you can.
Jason's flat tone draws Roy back out of his thoughts and makes him snigger. What's your beef anyway? Roy asks, still partially on autopilot. Are you into him? Are we going to have to fight to the death?
Please stop.
pistols at dawn or mano a mano, Roy continues, because he has a problem with following orders.
Roy.
Personally, I'm a fan of getting down and dirty, Roy says, checking the acetylene tank. Jason's sigh is crystal clear over the line.
Focus. You're into Nuga. Text me.
Jason hangs up abruptly. Roy Wood. I'm into new guy. Red Hood. Unimpressed face emoji. Kissy face emoji. I'll always love you best, Jaybird. I say this only because you're stoking my ego and declaring fealty. What's stopping you from doing something normal, like asking him out, or getting jiggy in the staff restroom? Who's been getting jiggy in the staff restroom, and why is this the first time hearing about it? Wait, no, that's not the important part. I don't even know if he's queer. HR is a thing, and I like having health insurance. Until those existential dilemmas are resolved, there will be no getting jiggy anywhere. So stop taunting me with what I can't have and validate my ego back, you jerk. You knew I was a jerk before you made me your medical proxy. Now you're stuck with me. You were supposed to be a jerk at the doctors, not at me. I'm an equal opportunity jerk. And what's with you passing up a chance to get down somewhere new and exciting just because it's against the rules? There are eyes everywhere. So, what happened to your whole fuck the man and give him a show manifesto back when you were shooting up dodgy mail order shit on a coffee house salary? The man started paying for my health insurance, and I'm weak. I'll grant you dubious and questionable sources, but a good 2% of what I shot into my body was for legitimate medical purposes. So, dodgy. Yeah, I'm alive. It worked, obviously. Hasn't anybody told you not to shoot up untested substances from strangers? Judge Mahoney. And Judge Fernandez. And that judge with the curly blonde hair. Judge Cupid. Judge Cupid. Yeah, him. Anyway, that's all sealed juvenile record. It does not exist. In fact, this entire conversation was made up for entertainment purposes only. What did your boy do to Lex this time? Tony asks, as if that's a reasonable question at work and doesn't violate the employee conduct contract in the slightest. First, not my boy. And second, I think Lex just exists in a state of readiness for being a bitch. Roy doesn't keep this job by not knowing his audience. Tony snorts and leans over the tablet Roy's been working from. I knew there was a reason I picked you for head shop, Gremlin. My willingness to call Lex out for being kind of a dick, Roy asks, as if making Lex miserable has not been his personal hobby for at least the last year and a half, since Jason nearly quit the same week he was hired. Roy holds grudges. Your willingness to call Lex out for being kind of a dick, and your discretion in finding me hilarious while not implicating me in the hilarity. Tony picks up one of the assortment of power supplies Roy's got ready to go on the workbench, turning it over in his hands. The feeling is mutual, Roy says, hooking a heel over the bottom crossbar of the stool and folding his arms while Tony fiddles. If I'm going down, you're going down, Tony agrees, holding a hand up for a fist bump. Roy does not leave him hanging. Go team mutually assured destruction. Redwood. Anyway, I'm reclaiming my BFF rhapsodizing time. I would like to rhapsodize over my crush. Red Hood. Crush. Jesus. I regret encouraging you already. I'm getting really mixed signals here, Jay. Am I fighting you to the death over Tim's hand or Tim's honor? I'd rather not fight to the death at all. Are you saying he's not good enough to fight to the death over? Are you impugning my love? I'm impugning your taste, and your loyalty, and your attraction to evil as long as it's hot and poured into skin-tight jeans. You have suspiciously strong opinions about Tim. Fighting to the death is still on the table. Who was talking about Tim? Anyway, he's not my type. Do you even have eyes? And he's practically a baby, chicken hatching out of an egg emoji. Nah, he just looks... Wait, how old is he? Cry laugh emoji. Relax, you're fine. He'll be 20 in a couple of months. Fucker, how'd he get this audition anyway? They're looking for a master's degree in engineering at least, which I am not at all bitter over, even though Lex doesn't have a degree in anything. He conceptualizes and leaves the actual work to Corey and the team. How is that fair, Jay? I can build my own shit. I'm being discriminated against over a piece of paper. So go get one. No. Then you don't get to bitch. It's a matter of principle. You could have a PhD in, like, 2 years. That's a slight exaggeration, even for me. Tim did it. I will not be intimidated. No. Wait, he has a PhD at 20? Not quite. He's working on the PhD. He's 20, with a master's in engineering. Also computer science, with an emphasis in cybersecurity. He's a compulsive overachiever. He's insufferable. It's a real problem. You're just mad because you majored in English with an emphasis in romantic literature. What did you ever think you were going to be doing with qualifications in 200-year-old chiclet? Woo a wealthy older man with my extraordinary eloquence, brilliant mind, stunning bone structure, and impressive physique. I can't tell if you're joking or not. I am not joking. And if you call it chiclet again, I'm lighting your mattress on fire. Okay, we're revisiting that later. Right now, how do you know this much about Tim? I have my sources. Primarily, he's my little brother. You're shitting me. Just because I majored in English doesn't mean we're an entire family of mathematical incompetence. No, that's not it. Not only is he hotter than the sun, his shoes cost more than our monthly rent. He's adopted. You're all adopted. GTG. Roy, light of my life in my workshop. Roy spins the stool he's sitting on, conveniently putting his phone behind him. Hey, Tony, what's up? Tony leans an elbow on the workbench, not coincidentally where he has a full view of Roy's phone, which Roy really hopes he remembered to flip face down. You and I, Tony says, are going to build a pneumatic needle shooter. Okay, I'm going to need more to go on than pneumatic needle shooter. Too many things come to mind, none of which he or Tony should be involving themselves with. In a rare demonstration of social awareness, Tony waves both hands. No, not that kind of needle. Well, possibly that kind of needle, depending. But it will not so much be injecting as be injected. Wait. Roy holds up a hand. Don't tell me. We're doing needle hidden in the candy. Close. Tony picks up a spare plug, fidgeting with it while he talks. Needle hidden in the middle of an apple. I've already proven that a regular sewing needle into a regular apple leaves a trace. However, I've got a hunch that shooting a hollow needle straight into the flesh at a perfect 90-degree angle is going to give us a clean shot. And if we get that, we're going to use it again to inject the dye for the second half of the urban legend. How likely is this episode to get us arrested for teaching the world to adulterate Halloween treats? Maybe 3 or 4%. The lawyers usually catch things like that. Roy taps the butt end of his soldering iron against the worktop. Huh. Okay. Might as well get some use out of the real-world experience. Right? Tony gestures to Roy. You get my vision. Get, yeah, but I'm not exactly convinced there won't be a mark. Roy nods his head at Tony's inner arm, since he's the one with his arm out at the moment. Apples are not blood vessels, my friend. Tony tosses the plug at the bin of plugs, and it bounces off. Eh. Roy tosses another plug neatly into the center of the bin. Show off. Obviously. Roy straightens up, stretching his back and pulling the tie out of his ponytail. Let's go shoot up some apples, I guess. 2 hours later, they've got caution tape around a broad corner of the shop until they're absolutely positive all the needles are safely on the magnet and the camera crew has had a chance to film the consequences of their round of failures. Jason's reply is waiting for him when he and Tony get back from the first disastrous tinkering session of the episode. Red Hood. 2 or 3 months, I think. Plus utilities. Roy frowns at the phone and blows a strand of hair out of his face while he taps out a reply. It's possible his chances with Tim are spiraling. Then again, if Tim's loaded, it shouldn't matter too much that Roy isn't, unless he's a snob. And if Tim's a snob, Roy doesn't want him anyway. He hopes Tim isn't a snob. Redwood. What the hell? And we're living on ramen and Totino's? I even swiped an apple from the prop boxes when Tony was out of the room for 5 minutes. Don't look at me. Tim came with an inheritance. I'm as broke as you are until at least 40. My heart bleeds for you. What's he even need a job for? Now I'm definitely not going to be your sugar daddy. He's a freak. He probably likes it. But I can tell you, he's not putting in the hours for fancy food. He lives on ramen and frozen pizza, same as we do. And coffee. Mostly coffee. But he can afford the good ramen and frozen pizza. What do I have to offer a guy like that? I note the distinct lack of any mention of your boutique coffee habit. As addictions go... Right. You do you. I still say if you made your coffee at home, you'd be able to afford things most people consider necessary to living a functional adult lifestyle. Like an actual bed frame. Floor mattresses are not sexy after 20. It is not the mattress that makes for the sexy times, but rather the raw sex appeal on the mattress. And just think how much more appealing that would be with a bed frame. Fuck off. Seriously, they're like $50 on Craigslist. Where the bed bugs are complimentary. Right, no bed frames from Craigslist. Maybe IKEA. Maybe Christmas. I've been a good boy all year. Do I look like I'm made of money? No, but it's been a while since I last guilt-tripped Ollie. Eventually, that's going to stop working. That eventuality has not yet come. Bed frames have to fall under reasonable requests, right? I don't know. This is Ollie. Predictability is not his middle name. He might think sleeping on the floor is a rite of passage to make a man out of you, for all we know. Roy chokes on a laugh. It's wrong, but it is kind of funny. He's really determined to make up for lost time. Oh yeah, God forbid Bruce Wayne be more progressive than Oliver Queen. It's not Bruce who tossed Roy out on his 18th over creative differences or something. Objectively... Probably better not finish that if you want the bed frame. Ollie isn't the elf on the shelf, Jay. Usually. Are you sure? As sure as I can be. The man made a fortune designing spy tech. Why the hell do you think I upgraded to a Stark phone I can't afford? He's worse than Alexa. It's creepy. He means well, probably. That's not what you said when you had me helping you cut B's tracker out of your arm. Once you got the profanity out of your system, anyway. You try cutting something out of your own arm. That hurt like a motherfucker. And that's different, because B did know when I was sleeping and when I was awake. And Ollie knew who you were with and if you were bad or good, huh? I'm always good. Thank fuck they hate each other. Anyway, bed frame. How do you think your little brother would feel about being a sugar daddy? I refuse to answer that on the grounds of never say those words in that order again. Roy turns off the buzzsaw and shakes out his hands and forearms until the feeling comes back into them. He takes off his red safety glasses to blow the sawdust off of them and rubs his eyes until he can focus all the way across the workshop. Mixed feelings about Tony's super buzzsaw is putting it mildly. On one hand, so satisfying. On the other hand, Roy needs a massage, a silk eye mask, a lie down in a dark room, and hazard pay after using it. He also needs to know why Jason is all the way across the workshop instead of being a distraction to Roy and his work when he most needs one. Some friend. Roy picks up his phone and texts, "Some friend." Then, in an act of friendly belligerence, Roy hits call. Across the workshop, he hears, before the call goes straight to voicemail. Jason shoots Roy a seriously look, and Roy just shrugs back. And Tony laughs at something. See how they feel when Roy makes Lex laugh? On second thought, no. Instead, Roy channels his passive-aggressive pettiness into going to the coffee shop, alone, where he will buy himself one coffee and enjoy it all by himself. Maybe send Jason an obnoxious text with an artful picture of his coffee and a caption about someone throwing over his BFF for an older man. And Roy will luxuriate in air-conditioned hipster splendor while he does it. Red could. Jaybird, text me when you take your lunch break. Red Hood. This sounds like a problem. You're a pessimist, you know that? It's not pessimistic when I'm right. What's your damage? He bought my coffee for me. That explains the name change. I didn't realize you've been introduced to him yet. I haven't. I'm sure this'll make sense eventually. Continue. We were going into the shop at the same time and got stuck in the doorframe. He laughed and said something about my shoulders. God, what did he say about my shoulders? Shit. Anyway, he held the door. Eye contact was made. We stood awkwardly in line next to each other, and then the cashier said my order was all paid up, and the name on the cup was Shoulders. All that rom-com, I never got his name shit. He's Tim, and he's got a weird sense of humor. Are you sure you haven't been watching too many rom-coms? Fuck you. I do not watch rom-coms. You watch rom-coms. I'm only there for the popcorn. Also, we only have one television. I watch historical romance dramas. So you watch old-timey rom-coms. Same thing. Can we focus on me? Really, Roy? Eyes met across a doorway. No name, no phone number, act of playful appreciation between strangers who part, never to meet again. Tragic. And may I remind you that you not only know his name, but work for the same show. It's not exactly the plot of The Notebook. I'm reporting you to the BFF board for violation of the best friend contract. On what grounds? Verbal and emotional abuse. Christ, fine. How did Dream Boy, who I will remind you is my little brother, know your coffee order? He didn't know it. He left his tab open for me. I could have ordered anything. He has a credit card on file with them. Who does that at a coffee shop? Tim. This means something. I don't think I'd take it as a guarantee of true love. You don't flirt with a man's shoulders and buy him coffee without at least a little bit of healthy appreciation going on. Sure, but there's appreciation, and then there's picking out colors for your wedding and designing your family monogram before you even know each other's coffee orders. It just sounds silly when you say it that way. But yes. Help. Help me make it less weird. What's his coffee order? Jay? Jaybird? I need to know his coffee order. Don't let me curse this beautiful thing between us before it even begins. I was just getting a snack from the vending machine. Calm your tits. He's just nice. He probably does that all the time. Did you sneer when you typed nice? You did, didn't you? I noticed that you're ignoring the rest of my message. He just does these things. And if you're that sure I'm the kind of guy who'd sneer at my little brother being a nice guy, why are you asking me? Defending my future boyfriend's honor. You are exactly the kind of person who would sneer at his little brother practicing random acts of kindness, all the while being proud of him as if he was your very own child. Fighting to the death may be on the table after all, if only to make you stop referring to my little brother as your future boyfriend, or my child. That's weird, Roy. It crosses boundaries I feel should not be crossed. Please continue. Has it occurred to you that I might find random acts of altruism hot? Especially when they pay for your coffee. You really think I'm that shallow? You are that shallow. Have you seen the price of coffee these days? I have. You poor, under-caffeinated souls. We do have coffee in the shop. You say coffee, I say motor oil, and I know motor oil. So chug. Spoken like a man with a college degree. I had 7 a.m. classes and 2 jobs, Roy. I didn't have time for chugging beer. Fair. I was kind of a deadbeat in my chugging years. And that's why you don't have a degree. I don't have a degree on principle, also because I dropped out of high school. And I get my coffee free half the time anyway. How? Fix the assistant manager's car, the head barista's motorcycle, and the new guy's mom's van, and one time a city bus. Maybe I should buy your brother coffee next time. Buy? Does that still count as buying? Or is it more of a leaving my tab open thing? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter what you call it. Maybe he finds random acts of altruism hot too. Does he? Loath as I am to say so, he probably does. Not that I'm complaining, Jason says, flopping down onto the grass next to Roy with a paper plate laden with every kind of barbecue known to man, almost, except for the barbecue. He passes Roy the other plate, which is basically barbecued meat with a piece of cornbread as a garnish. I thought we'd share. Roy snorts, taking the meatier plate and popping a shred of something delicious into his mouth. You're the best. second best, Jason says, following Roy's eyeline to Tim at the bottom of the hill, cheering Clint on with withering, yet camera-friendly, sarcasm. Your dream boy is right there, currently crushing Clint's remaining self-esteem into a tiny ball of self-consciousness for Bucky to sort out later. He takes a very serious bite of his coleslaw. Now is not too late to reconsider. Jay, you and I became friends because of the family sarcasm, not in spite of it. True, though we also became friends in spite of your sense of humor. Jason only serves to prove Roy's point, so Roy grins around a mouthful of food. The mouthful fails at its intended task. Jason barely glances up from his plate. I have seen so much worse than a mouthful of meat, Roy. You do not even know. Roy chokes on his mouthful, coughing up a piece that tried its best to go down the wrong way. Given that you're the queen of overshare, I know at least a dozen. Okay, Jason says, as if he's not wearing a pleased smile now, rather than objecting to a word Roy used. Don't come crying to me when it's your self-esteem withering. Pretty sure it'll be the only thing withering, Roy says, as they watch Clint stagger to a stop at the top of the hill, resting his hands on his knees before flashing a thumbs up, followed by a quick double flick of his fingers. 100, Roy translates. Say what you will about his stamina today, his proprioception and positional awareness should be studied by medical science. His accuracy is why he looks like he's going to die on that hill. He's their calibration. Jason takes another mouthful. And Tim is such a little shit. Roy clears his throat. I said it, and I mean it, Jason answers. He can do that too. He's just not telling anyone until Clint does all the hard work. Sneaky, Roy says. And then, I'm thinking a fall wedding. Maybe red and black for the colors. You two can have each other. Jason smothers any further comment with a mouthful of potato salad. Sweet. Family blessing. Roy leaves the conversation there, watching Tim kneel down to tighten his shoelaces during Clint's wobbly final descent. Roy can just barely make out Clint's pained 100 before collapsing face first onto the grass. Tim, on the other hand, looks morning fresh as he starts his first trip up the hill with a longer stride than Roy would have expected. How is he single? Roy may or may not be watching Tim's ass on the way up. Look at that. I am, Jason says, not looking. You're not looking. Yes, I am, Jason says, spearing a grilled pepper and taking a bite. I can still see you out of the corner of my eye. Jason pops the tab on a soda and takes a long drink. I don't need to look. I see him every day. Why do you get to see him every day? He's either in the bee shop or filming. Jason shrugs. I pass through the office every day. There's a green room. Sometimes he's in there too. And Roy is glad Jason specified because I have never once been to the green room. Jason shrugs. They don't put you on delivery duty. You're a big mechanical hotshot. Roy's first impulse is to grouch about his degreeless self not being allowed on the talent team. Then again, if he'd been allowed on the team, Tim wouldn't have been hired. Sucks to be the best, Roy says instead, watching Tim make a slightly clumsier version of Clint's sign. So, single? He is single, right? He is so single, Jason says. And attracted to men, right? Roy feels like he should have asked that question earlier. He is also so gay and insanely picky about his men, but yes. Roy's getting used to his stomach swooping with new Tim trivia. But this time it swoops down. Shit. What? He's picky, Roy says. Do I look like the picky choice? He has no illusions that his cut-down tea is going to win any sartorial awards. Jason narrows his eyes and then looks suspiciously amused. You never know. You might be his type. Fuck, Roy says. Scruffy redheads are nobody's type, and when did he even last shave? Even if his plans to date Tim are doomed, Roy can at least enjoy the scenery, watching Tim's hair shine and thighs flex in the sun on his way up and down the hill and up and down the hill, and maybe Roy's not too salty about being in the off-camera crew after all. Roy can hear, "Oh, maybe he's your Romeo." Jason sighs into his phone.
"I was working. You are working. We are at work."
Lex heard the ringtone again, huh? Roy continues sorting resistors. "You really ought to remember to silence that thing."
"As if you ever remember to silence Love Shack. I can hear it all the way in Lex's workshop."
Jason huffs.
"What's so important?"
"Oh, shit. That's right. It is important. Did you see his bracelet? And his forearms," Roy says, while Jason says,
"By his, I assume you mean Tim. And yes, I gave him that bracelet for his birthday. No comment on the forearms."
"Wait, you gave him the bracelet?"
"Yeah, when he was 16 and emancipated."
"I thought Bruce adopted him."
"After. He had to become a problem child first."
Jason does not, Roy notices, mention Tim becoming an orphan.
"And he nailed it."
Roy also ignores the orphan issue. Bruce's thing is Bruce's thing. "If I wasn't already desperately crushing on Tim, I'd start doing that right now," Roy says. "So what did he do for that bad boy status?"
"He may or may not have heard about his potential big brother's friend who went overseas for his GAS and celebrated his own Sweet 16 doing the same thing, which is a big unethical no-no."
"I notice it didn't conflict with your ethics." Jason scoffs.
"When have you known me to put ethics above righting a wrong?"
"Righting a wrong, huh?" Roy asks, around a sudden lump in his throat.
"Even Mother Nature isn't right all the time," Jason says. "And anyway, if I didn't go with him, he would have just done the whole thing alone."
Alone. At 16. All the things. Roy isn't sure if he's jealous or concerned that Tim may need a minder.
"Told you he's a stubborn little shit,"
Jason says, possibly confirming the latter. Where the ever-loving fuck did he find somebody to prescribe tea, much less commit to surgery at 16?
"You'd be amazed by the doors money opens up for a guy. Doors and international flights. And luxury hotel stays with dedicated nurses. And maybe some dark web purchases here and there."
"You're shitting me. I could have started at 16.
Or 14, if you're counting the tea."
There's a rhythmic metallic clank in the background on Jason's side.
"It wasn't going to get more illegal. I mean, he had to bribe an unscrupulous doctor for the blood tests, but unscrupulous doctors come pretty cheap in the city."
Roy looks up from blankly staring at the piece of wood in front of him to find Jason poking his head through the doorway, grinning at him. God damn it. Roy disconnects the call and folds his arms over his chest, ignoring the entire glitter stanza playing in his pocket until Jason gives up trying to call and walks across the workshop. "Your face just now," Jason laughs when he reaches Roy. "No, your face," Roy grumbles, freeing an arm and planting his hand over Jay's face for a little shove. He jerks his arm back before Jason can execute the time-honored maneuver of licking his palm. So, how'd it go? So far, so good. Instead of retaliating for the face shove, Jason slings an arm over Roy's shoulders in a side hug. He's happy and healthy. And considering I know a guy who's so into him he can barely function, I'd say it went okay. Red could. So, you were saying, all the things, at a completely inadvisable 16. This unauthorized proxy confession does not violate the literal bro code? Red Hood. I think it's acceptable as long as I'm being vague about the specifics of things. But believe me when I say he had a real glow-up. I can show you his freshman picture. It's hysterical. He's all ears, eyes, and goofy face. Your distractions will not work on me. This time. So, while I'm welding all this shit together, two questions. One, why are we talking in coded euphemisms? Two, even if he is your little brother, this is getting specific by process of elimination. I don't know if you can still call that vague. Are you telling me he just magically came home from extended vacation a real boy and then had to explain it to the family? I helped. But yeah? Not all exactly the kind of Q&A you want to share with your family. You might not. Actually, I'm pretty sure you made some stupid flimsy excuse to get out of it, and having met Ollie, I don't blame you. But for all B's many, many faults, insensitive cishet normativity ain't one. And we're speaking in coded euphemisms because technically, we are on the clock and working, and have both had Tony sneak up on us at least twice in the last week. Tony doesn't care. He does that for fun. And I am working. You make Bluetooth calls through your HUD all the time to bother your innocent coworkers who are trying to look busy. So do you. You made the setup in my safety goggles. Isn't it great? And voice-to-text is an amazing invention. Wait, are you actually welding right now? Did you set up Bluetooth and a HUD inside your welding helmet? It's not technically against the rules. I don't think the rules took Roy Harper into account. And whose fault is that? Yeah, I'm welding. It's the rail car for new guy's pneumatic ghostly hand car bot for next episode. Because he's gotta be extra. How do you have a crush on Tim one moment and sound like you'd gladly push him off the roof the next? I'm good at multitasking. Anyway, I didn't tell Ollie shit until it was all over and healed up. Dinah, yeah, a little more, eventually. Connor and Mia just got it. If you didn't tell Ollie when you had surgery, how did you explain your recovery time? Weren't you stuck living at home for a while? Thank you for reminding me of that humiliating period in my life just when I was exulting in my good fortune and benevolent employer. Unimpressed eye-rolling emoji. Middle finger emoji. So, Ollie? What's with the second degree lately? You were there. I told him we took a job off-grid in Kazakhstan and I was recovering from a gruesome war wound. What did you tell B when we went? That we were going to Thailand for your GAS? What the fuck? You are so goddamn lucky B and Ollie hate each other. Well, it's not like it's a secret what you were off doing now. I realize that to the rest of the world, I'm such an open book it's embarrassing. True. But the whole point of going all the way to Thailand was to avoid rapacious healthcare practices and parental judgment at the same time. And now you're telling me that Tim's parental unit knows about our incredibly secret vacation too? Is this part of your grand plan? Were you trying to preemptively cockblock future me? Of course I was. 10 years ago, I intuited that my then 10-year-old brother would grow up hot enough to melt your damn panties. What do you think? I think there are at least 15 different ways you could have made that sound less creepy and weird. And look at me, using none of them. Because you deserve it. Fuck you. Anyway, I approach the world with open arms and an open mind, but as far as I'm concerned, the world stops at Ollie's front door. I don't know about your fam, because you guys are practically the Addams family, but we have a mutual rule against discussing what's in our pants. There's no answer, and Roy spares a moment to hope Lex hasn't gone ballistic on Jason for texting during work. It wouldn't be the first time, but it's never fun. According to Tony, enduring a Lex explosion is the cruelest winter of the human soul. Tony's as dramatic as Lex's pissy, but Roy knows how to handle dramatic. Jason will deny it all day long, but he and Dick were Roy's drama training wheels. He moves on to collating the data on the 100 Haunted Steps story. The further he gets into the data, and the more steps he adds to the tally, the worse he feels for the B-team. Maybe he should buy Tim a massage. Maybe he should give Tim a massage. And that thought has Roy staring into the middle distance, unseeing. Would that be weird, offering Tim a massage? It would be weird. Roy snatches up his phone and mutes the ringer, letting Jay's call go to voicemail. Whoops. Asshole. I'm laughing at your dumb Adams Family comment, and then Lex walked in and caught me. That man is a ninja. Sucks to be you, Jaybird. Kissy heart emoji. He gets back to the data until he can feel his eyelids drooping with each new set. Roy privately acknowledges that this isn't so much a mid-afternoon slump as it is an early morning slump, and coffee might not be the worst idea he's ever had. It is definitely not the worst idea Roy ever had. He's had some doozies. But it's only when Roy catches himself mid-tilt on the stool that he tosses the tablet and grabs his jacket. He can pick up a peace offering for Jason while he's out. Coffee run. Buying your usual. Text me if you're still employed. And a scone. I deserve a scone after that kind of stress. I'm still employed. No thanks to you. I'll bet you're already on your way back. Without my goddamn scone. Roy has, in point of fact, purchased Jason a scone. He drops it on the workbench in front of Jason and leans his hip next to it. Ye of little faith. Jason makes a vaguely irritable grunt, unwrapping the scone and taking an aggressive bite. Think the camera crew has any openings? Makeup? Wardrobe? Anywhere without Lex? Do you actually know how to do any of those things? I'm a fast learner, Jason says darkly, soldering a capacitor onto the board in front of him. Considering all Jason cared about with electronics 2 years ago was whether they turned on or not, Roy concedes the point that if anyone could learn on the job quickly enough to change departments, it's Jay. He's also about 90% sure Lex would counter with a raise to keep Jason where he is. Personally, Roy thinks Jason should put in that application for another department just to test the raise theory. He'll never admit it out loud, even under pain of torture, but he wouldn't mind upgrading their standard of living from paper plates to actual dishes in this lifetime. Roy has really got to remember to turn off the ringer. Your scone of appeasement has been consumed. Also the coffee. I feel human again. Which means I'm addressing your libelous allegations against my family. Sometimes you've just got to accept that the contents of your pants require some completely platonic sharing. There was a time when I was possibly more familiar with Tim's parts than mine. I'm not exactly disagreeing about needing help, but that was incredibly weird in the context of your little brother. As if I wouldn't help. Tim speedran his entire transition from the moment he was emancipated. I have seen all of the gory details while he was healing, but the results were amazing. Tiptoeing over the edge of the bro code there. But man, it's gotta be nice to be rich at 16. Wait, he showed you the results. Yeah, so did you. Drunk blowjobs aren't about show and tell time, Jay. They're about getting off. What part of on the clock was not clear? Much less, Lex is in the building this morning. Anyway, it was more like a high five after months of hard work showing, not sexy showing. And you just said, yeah, sure? Obviously. I'm as close to experienced as you're going to get without hiring a specialist nurse. You're not that experienced. I've only got so many body parts. Sure, but I've seen them all, whether you remember it or not. What have I not seen? Go ahead. Take your time. I'll wait. Speechless. No, you asshole. Tony stopped by the shop to drop off the parts list he'll need for the spooky living armor thing. Meanwhile, my phone's going off with Love Shack every 15 seconds. And? You don't get to tease something that funny and not follow through. If you must know, I was treated to an absent-minded booty call story while he pawed through my parts. Don't say it. I heard it as soon as I hit send. I was gonna say. Dude, if it had been Lex. Well, what were you doing setting Love Shack for my ringtone? It was funny. Please tell me you didn't put an eggplant emoji next to my name because you thought that would be funny too. Well, I wouldn't be the first. Oh my god. Maybe I've got an eggplant emoji next to your contact on my phone. How would you feel? Validated. Euphoric, even. Fair. If you must know, your fire emoji, spicy pepper emoji, champagne popping emoji. I don't know if I'm flattered or horrified. You're blushing. I am not blushing. The rare blushingjaybird.png. Stop spying on me or I'm calling HR. But no, really? Is that what you have attached to my contact info? You'll always be fire emoji, spicy pepper emoji, popping champagne emoji to me. Fire emoji, spicy pepper emoji, popping champagne emoji. I am flattered and horrified at once. Who's fire emoji, spicy pepper emoji, popping champagne emoji? Roy decides Jay can wait for a reply and slowly places his phone face down on the workbench. Since putting it off isn't going to do anything to help, he turns to face Tony with a wide and helpless smile. Grindr hookup. What are we doing today, boss? Today, we are working on boring. What kind of weight limit does this boring need? Roy asks, because Tony's going to get to the point in Tony's time, and Roy's only job here is to yes and him until he's ready. 16 tons of boring. Short, long, or metric? Never ending. I think I'm gonna need to see those schematics. Tony sighs, wearing one of his looks that says, I am surrounded by entitled and thoroughly weaponized incompetence and deserve an award for my unlimited wellspring of patience. He drops a tablet on the workbench and folds his arms. Roy frowns, turning on the screen and sighing a sigh that means something like, I like having health insurance. Health insurance is a good thing. I will put up with so much for good health insurance. Why are we building Lex's thing? It's not a thing, it's a boring. Tony leans his back against the bench and squints into the rafters. The project doesn't actually look boring to Roy, but this is Tony. He might be literally obligated by his contract to snipe at Lex, for all Roy knows. They are on camera. Roy disappears his phone with a little sleight of hand covered by the tablet. Interviews with the dearly departed, mediums, seances, and Ouija board fraud. He reads out loud, in case Tony has been referring to it as the boring project since opening the tablet. It wouldn't be the first project Tony literally renamed to the boring thing I'm under contract to produce with only the funny complaints. Furniture, Tony says, the way most people say in triplicate. He fucked off and left us building furniture. In Lex's defense, this is how to fake a seance furniture, and that sounds kind of fun. Just wait. I'll leave the entire project to you and then sick Lex on you when he comes back and it's not exactly the way he imagined it. Impossibilities and all. Tony is, apparently, still salty over Lex's disappointment in taking delivery of a bot with dual treads rather than bipedal movement. The words, "Do I look like I'm made of gyroscopes?" were uttered. Where'd Lex go this time? Roy asks, for the sake of usable camera footage, flipping through the notes and designs. It really isn't terrible. Roy pulls up the notes and appends a couple ideas. Minor attempted corporate takeover. Tony waves a dismissive hand, probably rendering the footage. It's just one department. He barely uses it. Roy decides not to ask. So, what have you decided to supercharge on him in revenge this time? The Treadsbot was returned to Lex with reprogrammed movement and a yeeted speed regulator. It was a whole thing. It is not revenge. Tony reaches over and flips through the files until he comes to the storyboard for the seance sequence. I'm gonna make that orb float so well, Lex is going to believe it's haunted. So floating, obviously. And this is why Roy loves his job. He grins, taking off his hat for a moment to tuck a few stray hairs underneath. And spirit communication knocks that only work with an NFC key. Biometrically operated NFC key. You do know we have to make a few old-fashioned versions too, right? We do not, Tony says with a brilliant smile. You do. And if we get that done today, tomorrow we'll tackle the Ouija boards. Suddenly, the project looks less fun for Roy. If he'd wanted to be a carpenter, he would have dropped out of shop class instead of free period, otherwise known as Intro to Electrical Engineering. More biometrics in the Ouija boards. At least they're small. He can probably print the planchettes at the very least. You betcha, baby. Eye movement tracking with biometric recognition and predictive guidance. Is that anything like predictive text? Tony considers that for a moment, going through the stages of forgetfulness, recall, concern, absurdity, and dismissing the issue as someone else's problem. He shrugs. Talking in tongues just adds a certain verisimilitude. Roy and the boom mic operator stand side by side, watching Tony walk away, chatting with Scott and his camera. If I'm doing Tony's bidding, and I've got proof on film, I can't get fired for making Lex miserable, right? What? Happy gives Roy a look of confusion, which clears once Happy pulls the Stark pot out of his ear and Roy repeats himself. Oh, fired for doing what Tony tells you to do? Roy nods. Nah, we'd all be fired by now. You'll be fine. He gathers up his equipment and trails after Tony and Scott, muttering something about paying him bonuses for the sheer number of Tony's bon mots he's got to catch per episode. The guy can talk, it's true, and this is coming from Roy. He steals a peek at his phone before heading out to the woodpile. Red Hood. I'm going to pretend that, pointing emoji, entire, pointing emoji, conversation, pointing emoji, never happened. Since it never happened, and I would like to guarantee it never happens again, I am shamelessly deploying my little brother on you. Let's talk Tim. Tim, who is a little snoop and is reading over my shoulder and would like to know what conversation never happened. I hold you fully responsible. I apparently owe Tim for his restraint in not asking probing questions about the identity of Red Could and their suggestive emojis, or what Red could do. And you know how much I hate owing open-ended favors, so now you owe me one. Tim says hi. An involuntary noise of joy, followed by an even more involuntary noise of panic, escapes Roy. Sure, Tim said hi to him. And yeah, it was through Jay. But he hasn't been this happy someone knows he exists since at least eighth grade. After a moment focusing on drafting a spirit knocker that'll have Lex believing in the afterlife, Roy decides that's long enough to play it cool, but short enough to show interest, hopefully, without coming across as an overly enthusiastic psycho, so Roy picks up his phone again. Tell him hey back and thanks for the coffee the other day. Too late. He's in the car on his way back to the cemetery again. Damn it. Hey, I tried. I gave you an opening. I'm not Cyrano de Bergerac. Who? Remember that old movie Roxanne? Steve Martin with the big nose? And the letters? Yeah. Basically him. Yeah, you'd need a lot more nose. The nose isn't really the point. never mind. You may have to get radical and ask him out yourself, buddy. And next time, maybe don't leave him on read. Shit. I forgot about that. But the delay was put to good use. Making Lex mad. Of course not. I would never do that to my boss's co-boss. I'm helping Tony make Lex mad. You may have noticed, but I have a problem with authority figures. I've had my suspicions about you and authority figures. You might want to see somebody about that. Since Jason has indirectly told Roy he's on his own wooing Tim, and who uses woo these days, Roy resorts to the plan B of nerds everywhere. Statement tease. Okay, that shirt is a choice today, Jason says, when Roy peels out of his hoodie in the break room. Roy looks down at the pink, white, and blue letters spelling out, "Guess who failed their gender assignment?" It's not like there's a dress code. It's a choice any day. Jason passes a hand over his eyes and groans. You seriously forgot the new season PR shoot, didn't you? Roy did, actually. Huh. Roy had been wondering why Jay took so long getting ready this morning. He shoves his hands in his pockets. I'll bring the hoodie. It's going to be something like 100 in the shade. Whatever, I'll live. I'm dying. Roy throws off the hoodie for the fifth time in the last hour and falls face first on the grass. Why can't I just wear the t-shirt? This is discrimination. This is the network rules against showing copyrighted material, Jason says, without mercy, and without bothering to take his eyes off his book. You're the worst best friend ever, Roy says into the sod. A cold bottle of water nudges Roy in the arm, and he lifts his head to find Jason judging him. All right, I was wrong. You're a B-plus best friend. Still room for improvement, but good job. Well, shit. Now Roy has to sit up again to drink the water. He and the bottle have a stare down while they both sweat. Jason snorts. Would getting you a straw boost me in the rankings? It would, actually. Nah, Roy says, rolling over and staring at the sky in a vague effort to convince his body that water is worth the effort. He sits up with a groan and uncaps the bottle. How much will the producers hate me if I pour this over my head? Enough, Tony himself won't be able to save you. Jason's probably right. Roy makes a sad noise and then pours the entire bottle of water down his throat in one go. There. He flops back onto the grass where the world is marginally more cool and forgiving. I'm dying. Jason leans over enough to look directly at Roy with his "I am concerned" face. Do you need more sunscreen? Shade? They offered the AC in the van for emergencies. This is why Jay's his best friend. I'm just whining. Roy lets out a long sigh when cool fingers rest against the side of his neck. You're bright red. Of course he is. The day he plans to catch Tim's eye, and here he is, covered in sweat, grass stains, and a spectacular sunburn. Shit. Not exactly what he hoped to be noticed for. Hang on, I'll find sunscreen. SPF for vampires and gingers, Roy mumbles at the cosmic unfairness of it all. Jason laughs at him, leaning down to press cool fingers against the back of Roy's neck again until he melts into the grass. Be right back. Roy says, because words are more effort than they're worth, and Jay is a treasure. Red Hood. Still alive. Red Hood. I still say it was excessive carrying me to the first aid truck. You are literally the only one saying that. The AD was literally on the phone with the producers, and Clint swears he heard the AD very seriously discussing OSHA. Clint's deaf. Is this discrimination, I hear? Jay, come on. Jason frowns at his phone when the expected string of texts doesn't materialize. Did he die? Tim asks, joining Jason on the edge of the parking lot. He passes Jason another bottle of water. Possibly, Jason says, before remembering he's talking to another human being and may be misconstrued. Tim nudges Jason with an elbow until he looks up. Seriously, is he okay? Tim's eyebrows are pinched, and he's trying to read Jason's face instead of his phone. Proof of life, please. He should be. The first aid crew have dealt with so much worse. Tim bites his lips to muffle laughter. And half of those were Clint alone. You sure didn't waste time. Jason ducks his head and steals a glance at Tim's face while he stares at the half-full bottle of water in his hands. I work with him every day. I've already been around for a couple of incidents. Tim raises his eyebrow without looking at Jason. Not creepy at all. Not even a little. Jason's phone beeps and he holds it up, not sure whether to laugh or groan. Oh my God. Where did he get that marker? What? Jason snorts, turning the phone to face Tim so he can see the picture Roy sent in reply. Picture of a post-it note reading, "Not dead yet, RH." All limbs intact. Not even a paper cut. Chill. Picking up food on the way back with Tim. You good for now? Thumbs up emoji. Never better. Wait. How much of this did Tim see? All of it. Relax. He was worried about you too. I am relaxed. He was. Yeah, he's a peach like that. Tim stops at his car and leans on the roof, waiting for Jason to finish texting. Does he need anything? Jason slides into the car after Tim. A do-over on every decision he made today since waking up, but other than that, nah. He's barely buckled in by the time Tim puts the car into gear and whips out of his parking space. I wouldn't say every decision. Tim watches Jason while he rolls through a stop sign. Maybe rethink the hoodie. Or rethink the tea, Jason says, gritting his teeth against the urge to preemptively slam on an invisible brake when they reach the main road, just busy enough to make merging in a nightmare, but not busy enough to slow down the traffic. That does not deter Tim. That does not slow Tim down. In fact, Tim accelerates hard into the road when none of the other drivers seem interested in giving him an opening. I liked the tea, Tim says, passive-aggressively zipping around every car that passed while he was waiting to merge. He likes the shirt. If I die on the way back to the studio, I leave every cent I own to you. Tim has only the barest flush of sunburn on the top of his cheekbones and the tip of his nose, and it looks unfairly deliberate. Unlike Roy, who's really enjoying the whole shedding like a reptile experience. It's adding a certain zest to his day. Red could. Got 5 minutes. Four now. Three and a half. Red Hood. Jesus Christ, Roy. I have 3 minutes and a bottle of aloe and eternal gratitude. Fine, get in here. It's not as if Tony's going to care whether you're a few minutes late. Best friend Eve. Roy has definitely looked better than he does right now, hunched over a workbench in Lex's shop, with only his forehead touching the bench, while Jason smooths aloe on the back of his neck, his hairline, his ears, even behind his ears. It's his fault for lying face down in the grass, but a guy's gotta do what a guy's gotta do. So now he gets to man up and deal with the sunburn, peeling, Jason's terrible bedside manner, and a nasty bug bite on his cheekbone. Fuck my life, Jay. Big baby. Roy raises a hand with the middle finger extended. Even Clint is rocking a golden glow. Clint, Jason says, smoothing his hair back and dabbing the aloe along the part he was wearing in his hair yesterday, is not a freckled redhead. He also let Natasha slather him in sunscreen. You could have slathered me in sunscreen. I did. That's true, actually. He did. And you picked that day to skip your hat. Next time, I want Tim to slather me, Roy mumbles into the wood. Tim didn't burn. I hate to tell you this, Roy, but even Tim's hands aren't magical enough to give you useful melanin. Jason carefully gathers Roy's hair away from the sticky aloe and twists it into a hipster bun for him, because he's just that awesome. Roy would kill for Jason. Roy would die for Jason. Roy will stay here with his forehead pressed against the workbench for just a little while longer, and maybe Jason will rub in more of that aloe. You don't know, Roy says, arms hanging limply at his sides. Jason snorts. Tony's drama is rubbing off on you. Speaking of rubbing, Roy says, for possibly the first time in his life with no innuendo at all. Hate to tell you this, but I'm cutting you off on the aloe until after lunch. What the fuck? Roy doesn't lift his head or otherwise move and lets his voice do the incredulous arm waving for him. Jason flips the aloe bottle closed and presses cool fingertips against Roy's cheek. Jay's fingers are always nice and cold. You're turning green, my friend. Sweet. Roy takes in a Herculean breath and forces himself upright on the exhale. Green cancels out red. How do I look? Like an alien in a wig. I'm cutting you off on the best friending. It's a very high quality wig. Give me my aloe so I can leave with dignity, Jason. Green, Roy, with freckles. Jason hands over the bottle. We passed the last exit to dignity a while ago. Roy snatches the bottle up as soon as it's in reach. I make green look good. See you at lunch, Shrek. Roy flips Jason the bird and holds it up all the way out of the workshop. I can hear you laughing all the way across the shop, dipshit. What happened to eternal gratitude? I come with fine print. Kinky. Replacement. How's he doing today? Almost OG. Green. OG. Who? Almost OG. The hell are you doing here? OG. TBH, I was just going to ask you that. Replacement. Roy turned himself green. Almost OG. Technically, I helped, but yes. OG. Roy, what? Replacement. That was not even on my bingo card. OG. Roy's like that. Almost OG. No bingo card on earth can possibly capture the full frontal Roy Harper experience. OG. Why would you say it like that? Almost OG. I derive pleasure from your misery. Red could. I look like an alien in a wig. Red Hood. Told you. I am not pulling off this look. Really not. Red really could. Jay? Jaybird? Super urgent. Fuck it. The ringtone is more muffled than usual. Come on, come on, Jaybird.
Fuck, Roy, can this wait 5 minutes?
There's an echo, and Jason sounds like he's been running. Look, I don't care if you're hiding from Lex in the bathroom again, because no, it can't. Roy paces the length of the workbench, keeping a furtive eye on the doorway. Your brother just came into Tony's workshop to see me. Jason's voice is strangled.
That is what can't wait 5 minutes?
I am not done, Roy hisses into the phone. He came to see me because I'm green. What have I done in life to deserve this?
Excuse me?
Jason asks over faint water running and fabric shuffling sounds, the distinctive creak of the bathroom door.
And I hope you realize you owe me for taking this call.
Look, I'm sorry I called while you were in the john. Roy tries to run a hand through his hair, realizes it's still in a bun, and grimaces. He could be back any moment.
I fail to see why that's a problem. He's not the kind of guy to give you shit for being green. Tony didn't give you shit for being green,
Jason says.
Right?
Obviously. Tony only gives me shit about things that involve snooping, or it's no fun. Roy picks up a screwdriver, flipping it in his hand to burn off some nervous energy, in the hope he comes across less like a freak by the time Tim gets back. Jason ugly snorts into the phone.
He'd probably disagree with that, but I'm siding with you on this one. Sec.
The phone goes mute on Jason's end. Red really could. Jason! The workshop background noise on Jason's end comes back.
He snoops. It's a compulsion. So, the big bad Timothy. Hit me. Ow!
Tell your mystery assaulter I appreciate their assist. Roy takes a deep breath to get it all out in one before Tim comes back, which is a very real possibility at any moment. He came to check out the green, asked a few questions I think I answered. God, I hope I answered. There is a definite possibility he just stared, and now Roy can't get the thought out of his head. So he asked if I wanted help getting ungreen, and I said, yes. I wasn't thinking he actually meant it. And then he said, be right back. And Jay, he could be right back any second now. I didn't know he meant right now. Help.
Wow,
Jason says. Hurry it up.
I'm unpacking.
There's hammering in the background.
Unpacked. I still don't see the problem.
I was flirting, and he was just being nice, offering help. Maybe, I think. Jason sighs, drawing it out longer than Roy personally thinks is necessary.
He was flirting, Roy. That was Tim flirting. He's very bad at it.
What?
Tim. Flirting. Awkward.
I get gotta go. Red Hood. Green alien emoji, 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 cry laugh emoji. Get him, Tiger. Almost OG. Go get your man, baby bird. Red could. Guess who got a date? While he was still green. That really narrows it down. Tim. Very funny. I mean, technically it is Tim, but I am not the Tim half of this particular date. Can we focus? God, you're easy. I'm willing to change that for your baby brother. Or at least, I vow to bestow my easiness only on Tim. I stand before you a new man. I'm having a life-changing moment here, and I can hear you laughing at me all the way across the shop, dipshit. Kissing heart emoji. Red did. I am the luckiest bastard on the show. He's amazing. Well, that was fast. Apparently, your baby brother doesn't believe in wasting time. He's a life's too short kind of guy, and I am fully on board. Congratulations. He's yours. Registration and proof of vaccination will arrive in your mailbox within 7 to 10 days. Please keep him. I hate to remind you of this, Jay. But we live together. It's going to be really counterproductive if I take him home and keep him. You're assuming you'll keep him at our place. If you think, for one moment, that he is going to be willing to sleep on that nasty-ass floor mattress... Smug smile emoji. You're shitting me. Kissing emoji. So much more than sleep. Jesus Christ, what have you done to each other? Jaybird. Because you're my best friend in the entire world. Possibly the only person in Gotham willing to put up with me as a roommate without committing homicide. And my future brother-in-law. Please stop saying that. I genuinely respect and appreciate your efforts in resisting your homicidal urges here. I'm giving you one chance to rephrase your question. I had a question on the nature of what may or may not have been done to each other, involving my nasty-ass floor mattress, enthusiastic consent, and your little brother. That was even worse. I know. But someone in this room who is not me did spend at least 2 months insisting I deserve more than drunk brojobs. The bar has been raised. My eyes have been opened. And I like him. He's unhinged. And his brain is so sexy. We established that. He once weaponized a lawn. Who does that? Who even thinks like that? Tim. I am so into him, it hurts. And I think it's mutual. Roy is too fidgety to stay still while waiting for Jason to text back. He's even too fidgety to one-sidedly text Jason until he threatens Roy with property damage. By the time Roy hears his phone go off, he has fidgeted the contents of the misc bin all over the bench. And he scatters any organization he might have accidentally done while digging his phone out of the mess. It stops ringing before he finds it, but then dings with an incoming text. Red Hood. He says to tell you it's mutual. Roy nearly misses the stool sitting down and hears the unmistakable camera shutter sound of somebody capturing the stupid grin on his face. Incoming with coffee, Tony says cheerfully, poking Roy in the ribs with the pointy end of an insulated screwdriver. What? Tony makes a vague gesture over his shoulder, pointing at the interior shop door. What? Roy says again, looking up, expecting Jason. Not Jason hanging back in the workshop doorway, while Tim walks in with two coffees and a carrier hanging casually in one hand. That leaves the other hand free to tangle in the hair at the nape of Roy's neck and haul him into a filthy kiss that is completely inappropriate for work and currently making his morning. Roy fully ignores both Tony's wolf whistle and Jason's quiet groan of exasperation. Priorities. Roy wraps his legs around Tim before he can get away, grinning. Hey. Hey, Tim says, plucking a coffee out of the holder and setting it down in a clear space on Roy's workbench. He leans back against the leg Roy has him in, casually resting his palms on Roy's thighs. Roy tightens his legs. What's the rush? One of us has to go be photogenic at this ungodly hour. Tim gives Roy's thighs a squeeze and steps out of his hold. It's 9:30 in the morning, Jason calls through the doorway between workshops. Because for a man this squeamish about his little brother getting some, Jason's awfully nosy. Tim ignores Jason, just snags a coffee from the holder and backs away, giving Roy a wry smile. There isn't enough coffee on Earth to hide these dark circles without at least half an hour in the makeup chair. I didn't even notice, Roy says with complete honesty. Maybe you need more coffee, Tim says, still backing away, just very slowly. Lucky for me, my boyfriend brings the good stuff, Roy says, toasting Tim with his coffee and fumbling the entire cup when he hears what he just said. He tries to cover it with a casual sip of coffee and naturally burns the shit out of his tongue. He flashes Tim the thumbs up of a man who definitely did not just burn a layer of skin off his tongue. Better take care of that. Tim glances at the coffee cup, then at Roy, smile widening. Already on it. Roy says. The burn's not that bad. It'll be fine. At least one of us can be functional first thing in the morning. It is almost 10, Jason says from the doorway. Not yelling, but not exactly not yelling. Tim raises his eyebrows and turns to face Jason. He lifts one hand with the middle finger extended and pours scalding coffee down his throat with the other, in possibly the most passive-aggressive power move Roy has seen since Tony and Lex's epic glacial silence of 24. "Did you hear something?" Tim asks Roy, looking directly at Jason. "I could swear I heard something. You might have robins in the rafters." "Robins," Roy repeats. Tim shrugs. "I don't know, or larks or something. I'm not really a bird person." He waves a hand to wave goodbye to Roy, blatantly ignores Jason, and swans out of the workshop. Jason snorts and retreats into Lex's space, and Roy now knows exactly what it feels like to smile so hard it hurts. A cold bottle of water thumps onto the workbench next to Roy. "You're staring at his ass, aren't you?" Tony asks, sidling up and completely ruining the moment Roy was having staring at Tim's ass. "I'm not criticizing," Tony says. "It's a great ass. I'm a connoisseur." "I really don't want to have to fight my boss to the death," Roy says, not looking away until Tim ducks under the roll door and disappears. He turns to Tony. "I like my job." "Purely artistic appreciation." Tony squeezes Roy's shoulder. "Your job security was never in doubt, my friend." "Because I know where your bodies are buried." "That too. And you should," Tony says. "You buried most of them for me." Roy holds up a fist for bumping. Tony does not leave him hanging. Go Team Mutually Assured Destruction. Roy stands up. "Those bodies won't bury themselves." Coda. Red Did. "Hey, where are you this morning?" Red Hood. "Meeting." "Seriously?" "Sec." "Okay." "Just don't forget they're catering lunch today." "And I fully intend to steal a couple of sandwiches for later." "I need my favorite accomplice." "Sandwich heists just aren't the same without you." "And here I thought you'd be lunching with Loverboy from now on." "And abandon my Jaybird? Never." "He's off-site for lunch today, huh?" "Maybe, but our lunchtime is sacred, Jay. Sacrosanct." "Those words mean the same thing." "There is nobody in the world I would rather steal sandwiches with on the company dime." "Did they order anything vegetarian this time?" "They fucking better." 15-minute break. 10 minutes minus however long it takes to find my fucking lighter. Jason lowers himself to the platform of the loading dock next to Roy, shaking a cigarette out of the pack and lighting up. "So," Jason says around the filter, "now that the pining is officially over, we're done with Tim this and Tim that. No guarantees." Jason huffs, leaning over and bumping Roy's shoulder with his. "I guess I can put up with you two being disgusting at each other for a little while longer." "Fuck you, we are not disgusting." "Completely gross," Jason says, straight-faced, and completely ignoring Roy flipping him the bird. He takes the cigarette out of his mouth, blowing a stream of smoke at the roof. "Anyway, I have wooed my woo, successfully." "That was succinct." Jason leans back on one hand, bringing the other to his mouth for a drag on the cigarette. "Thank you. It's a skill." "Wait, you what?" "Wooed," Jason says with a straight face, holding it for about 2 seconds before sputtering into laughter, smoke puffing all around him. "I have landed my hot, wealthy older man." Privately, Roy reminds himself that he is never using the phrase "daddy issues" around Jason again. "Is this your way of telling me you're beginning a new life as a kept man?" Roy asks, instead of that, or letting out the urgent voice at the back of his head that needs his roommate's share of the rent. "Nah, Tony's not that kind of guy. I'm not that kind of guy." Jason leans forward, resting an elbow on his knee, smoking contentedly. "What?" "What?" Roy says, out loud this time. Jason grins around the filter, wiggling his eyebrows. "What?" Roy says a third time, while his brain reboots. Jason ashes into the loading bay, looking unfairly smug. Red Did. What the fuck, Jaybird? Red Hood. Anyway. You stealthy little shit. How? Extraordinary eloquence, brilliant mind, stunning bone structure, and impressive physique. No, I mean, yes, you have all of that. You also implied friskiness in the staff bathroom. And Tony's office. Mind blown emoji. Smiley face emoji. How does the entire lot not know? Everybody was too busy making bets on you and Timothy. But Tony is literally the noisiest person I have ever met in my life. With no modesty. And no filter. Don't get me wrong, because he's the best boss I've ever had, but he's a walking HR disaster. A master of overshare. Yeah, I have a type. But how did I not know? Too busy making bets on you and Timothy, like everybody else, probably. Wait. Did anybody win the bet? Yeah. Who? GTG. The end.